Hi, and welcome to the 90s Podcast, an aviation podcast. I'm Matteo, a former Mirage 2000 fighter pilot, currently flying the Airbus A330 as a commercial pilot in Asia. In this podcast, I will interview pilots and entrepreneurs, talking about flying, careers, and commitments. From military pilots, commercial aviators, aerobatic junkies to influencers, we will go through their unique journey in a one-on-one interview. Together, we will identify the lessons learned of their careers and the future plans they are looking forward to achieve. If you like this podcast, subscribe on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Deezer, or Spotify. You can as well follow me on Instagram, on my professional account, 9Gs Consulting, and click on the link for any inquiry. And now, let's stop cheap talks. Squeeze and get ready for the G-load. Today's episode special guest is Eva Claire Marseille. She's a commercial pilot, flying for one of the biggest airline company in Asia. She's the host of the blog flywitheva.com and of the Instagram account at flywitheva. Here's a quick highlight of this episode.
Vacancy was direct entry, first officer, A330 or 747. So during the interview, they asked me, Eva, if you get a job and if you get the chance to request a certain fleet, what's your preference? So I talked for about 20 minutes why I wanted to fly a 747.
And now, without any further ado, Eva. Hey Eva, first of all, thank you for coming here. I know you've got a very busy schedule right now.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me here.
You're welcome. Yeah, Eva, first of all, can you tell us how did you went to aviation? What is your professional curriculum?
It's not really the standard route. I never dreamed about it when I was a young girl. It just never occurred to me. I was always really good in languages and not that good in maths and chemistry. Physics was actually all right, so I just forced myself to do all these beta subjects because I thought I would probably never deal with them in my life anymore. And I actually went to study Dutch literature. I'm from the Netherlands, and journalism first because I wanted to be a journalist. So during these studies, I changed my mind, and so I was about 22, 23 when I visited an information day of a flight school, and I didn't know anything about the aviation industry, just that it was some adventurous, mysterious world to me. I can tell you, I wanted to be a journalist to live a certain lifestyle. Like, I wanted to live abroad. I didn't want to work 9 to 5. I wanted to live this big, adventurous, interesting life, meeting interesting people. Just really more than a job. That's something that I could really dive into. And then it dawned on me that in order to have this kind of lifestyle and this kind of career, you have to be so excellent as a journalist and you have to be really good in networking that if things didn't turn the way I wanted them or I imagined them, I wouldn't end up just living in Holland, writing for some mediocre magazine, writing about people that actually live the lifestyle that I wanted. And so that's when I started to doubt. Like, I still love journalism and reading and writing, but I thought in order to live this kind of life, this can go pretty much the wrong way. And then my friends and my mom said that I mentioned quite a few times, and I never realized this because it was just so far away from the world that I was comfortable in. Like, I didn't know any pilots, so they said that I mentioned a couple of times that I was jealous about pilots, like the kind of life and the kind of job they have. And I was surprised, like it was something in my subconscious, I guess. So, and then why not visit a flight school? Like, I was really doubting, like, where am I heading now with my studies and what kind of a career do I want to go for? So I might as well just check it out and see what is this about and what does it take to become a pilot? And then on this information day in Holland, I just felt that this was absolutely something I had to try. Like, it all sounded so exotic. Like, you learn about meteorology, principles of flight, and you go learn in these little Piper Archer airplanes to, you go on a little on a flight every day, and that's cool. And it just resonated with me. Like, wow, this is if I manage to get into this studies, then that's meant for me. So from never even thinking about it, it became my biggest goal at that moment.
So you are from Netherlands.
Yeah.
Can you describe your aviation journey from Netherlands to Hong Kong, where you're currently flying?
Yeah, sure. So first, I graduated in 2010. This was just after the global financial crisis. So I did an integrated course 2008-2010. And I applied everywhere, literally everywhere. But the market was really tough to break into as a cadet with your 200 hours and you're very eager, but there's hundreds at that moment that want their first job, plus all the pilots with experience were also looking to get a job because a lot of companies went bust at that time. So that was not a good time. So I worked in operations first for 2.5 years of a Dutch airline called Martinair at Schiphol Airport. So I did that for 2.5 years, and I still tried everything to find my first job. And then at one point, I got an opportunity with Ryanair, the well-known low-cost airline in Europe. That was my first big opportunity to get into the flight deck. So I gave it everything, and I got the job. So that was early 2013. That's when I started. I did the type rating 737-800s. And I flew for about 4 years for them. And I was based most of that in Barcelona. And I was looking for a new opportunity. Like, after a couple of years, the market got significantly better. And it's a great start in the industry, but there is definitely better gigs out there. So I always had my eyes open to see what else was there. And a lot of my colleagues, they went to the Middle East, but I don't want to commute. I want to live where I'm based. Like, I did the same in Ryanair. I was just enjoying life in Barcelona. And I couldn't see myself living in Dubai or Doha because I'm a very much outdoors person. So that wasn't an option. So I had my eyes in Europe or in Asia. So in Europe, still the doors of airlines that I thought were a good opportunity stayed closed for a long time. And then in Asia, well, the airline that I am in now, they were always on my radar, and then they had a vacancy to come as a first officer with experience, so direct entry first officer. And a friend of mine was already flying here for some time, and he got in touch with me. Eva, isn't this an opportunity for you? So we called, and he explained me everything about life in Hong Kong. I'd never been here. I didn't really know the terms and conditions of the airline yet, but he explained me, and I was very excited with everything I heard. Plus, they had the airplane I dreamed of flying in their fleet, the 747. So I applied. Long story short, in the end, I got an interview. It took, and then I started like just over 2 years ago. So that was end of 2017. Let's say early 2018 I started. So I'm just 2 years in the company now.
You were in Ryanair, and now you're flying for a major career in Asia. How did you prepare your two different assessments?
In Europe, it was my first assessment opportunity, and I already graduated 2.5 years before that. So in order to feel ready for the simulator, I rented a simulator regularly, like almost once a month. So that cost me a lot of money. But it was worth it because the first time I started with that was after 1.5 years after my MCC. So the first time you're in the simulator, it feels like you never sat in the flight deck of a 737. So you basically have to start from scratch. And then every month it got better and better until I felt absolutely completely ready for the assessment. So I did that. Plus I studied a lot, like the famous book, Ace the Technical Pilot Interview. I knew it pretty much by heart. And again, for my later assessment with my current airline, it's like the Bible. So yeah.
Yeah, I know this book by heart.
Yeah, it's falling apart. But it's super useful. And then to really prepare for the interview, also I have a friend, he is a pilot for KLM and he's also a coach. So, well, we became actually friends after he coached me. So I did a full day, like coaching day with him to prepare me for the interview, like how to present myself as a future captain, right? So he really sharpened me, like in my answers and in how I come across. So that was also worth it. So I think I really attacked it seriously. Like this was it. Like I did everything I could, I think.
Yeah, and I think you were right at that time and it worked well. You know, I was in the military before. Did you think about joining the military and flying for the Royal Netherlands Air Force?
No, I never thought about that actually. No, I mean, I have great respect for everybody. Like, I think it's really hard to get into and it's a whole different way of flying. And I'm already proud that I became an airline pilot. Like, I think the next level is military pilot. So I don't know. I never imagined it for myself. I've always had the goal of being an airline pilot.
Yeah, this is a special life, I can assure you.
Yeah, like a lot of my colleagues are ex-military now, unlike in Ryanair, where, you know, we all had the same background, basically. Everybody was just from flight school, 737, and then after 4 or 5 years to the left seat. So now it's really interesting to meet people with a military background like yourself.
You just mentioned it before, but now you're flying the 747-8. You were flying the 737 in a Ryanair. Except the size and the four engines, do you see any differences flying the Boeing 747 versus the 737?
Well, it's very much in the same direction. Like I felt when I started the conversion course, that always felt very comfortable. Like I was now upgrading to the bigger sister, basically. So also the flight deck layout, it just looks so similar to the 737-800. And a lot of the systems are a little bit more advanced, especially in Dash 8, to make the pilot's life easier with electronic checklist and automatic anti-ice and things like that. It was an easy transition, I would say. Like it was more difficult to get used to the new procedures than to get used to the airplane. And I think the 747 is much nicer to fly, more stable.
I don't know if you guys fly a lot in China, but they have such complex taxi plans. Your current 747 system looks very nice, especially the ground mapping. It can be very useful preventing some taxi incursions.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have it on the 400s, so then I really miss it. So this map is only on the Dash 8, the airport map. So yeah, I find it very, very useful to use, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. You previously flew for Ryanair, a low-cost airline with a special business model. Can you describe to the audience the specificity of the quick turnaround that you need to perform to respect the assigned slots?
Yeah, exactly. So in Ryanair, most days would typically be 4 sectors. So you start and finish the day at the same spot. There's no layovers. So let's say I will fly Barcelona to London Stansted, you are at the gate and then it's a 25-minute turnaround. Passengers out, passengers in, and basically the turnaround is challenging to make it on time. Like every turnaround you try to speed up, because if you have a delay in the morning, it's gonna push on through the whole day, right? You still have three more flights after that to do. Yeah, and there was all kinds of rules, like one pilot had to do fuel supervision, which is something we currently don't have anymore. So that would always take a lot of time to stand on the headset outside during the refueling. And then in flights, like another thing that is very different to me, whenever you needed to get out of the flight deck, like to use the washroom, it was always such a hassle. Like, yeah, the cabin crew needed to do a lot of sales, and you would always disturb them if you needed to get out of the flight deck. So it was never the right moment, and you always felt that it was better when you were almost pushed back into the flight deck to do your job there and not disturb anybody in the back. So that's different now, of course. It's so relaxed. There is no passengers or cabin crew.
Yeah, I think that you had the kind of feeling to be behind the timeline sometimes. Right now, you fly freighters. Can you describe the main differences in terms of roster and lifestyle?
Yeah, so the roster comes out, and that's basically the days you're going to be flying for cargo. But it's usually a completely different pattern, because for some reason, cargo is subject to a lot of roster changes. There's always like ad hoc flights, or there's AOGs, and the roster gets completely switched around. So you know you're going to have to work those certain days that you're rostered, but usually different patterns. So, and with passengers, you knew exactly what you were gonna fly, because this is all set. The passengers have booked their tickets, and they go early morning, and they want to be there in the afternoon, and this is all set. All these slots with cargo can be switched around, and the pilots can be easily switched around. So I'm very much used to roster changes, or to report for, like I had last month, to go as a passenger, like positioning to Sydney, and it changed to operating to Anchorage. So it's like the other side of the planet, and another kind of duty. So I'm very used to that. So you have to be flexible, and I don't really care. Like, sometimes I'm a bit bugged. Like, I try to plan a lot of things on my layovers. In Corona time like this, it's not so easy. Nothing to be planned, stay in the room. But before that, and hopefully after that, I try to like see people, plan things, and then that can usually when I have a nice itinerary for my destination, that's when it changes. So that's different with cargo. And then, I mean, now I fly long haul instead of the short haul in Ryanair, so that's different. The layovers are there. There's only 2, 3, or 4 crew on board, all pilots, no cabin crew. So yeah, we make the meals, we do everything, right? It's a very, very relaxed atmosphere. Like, I always desired to fly cargo when I worked in Martinair operations, as I said before, because I met with a lot of the crew when I was working in operations, and most of them were cargo pilots or flying cargo. And I always thought these are the type of people I would love to work with in the future. Like, they're not pretentious. They don't feel like they're king of the sky or some way superior to other people. No, we just our job. We like to fly, and we like to have fun and do it safe. So, and that's exactly the atmosphere that I find now in the cargo team pilots that I'm operating with. So that turns out very much true.
Yeah, the atmosphere is really peaceful. I had the opportunity very recently to fly special cargo flights, and it's really good. There is no stress at all. You don't have any delay due to missing passengers, and the cargo is always happy and on time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and you don't have the stress of maybe a medical emergency, which we had like in Ryanair sometimes as well, or, you know, that you have to divert, or someone pregnant and fainting. No, there's no passengers, right? And in case of delay, you don't have to explain to the boxes. So it's all much more relaxed, and I recommend it to everybody. Like, I think it's a well hidden secret so far. Like, it doesn't have the status it deserves.
Yeah, so don't tell anybody. Just keep it to yourself. When you interviewed for your current company job offer, did you know that it was for a freighter position?
Yeah, so the assessment was either for the Airbus 330, which is a passenger plane company, yeah, or the 747. So it was the vacancy was direct entry, first officer, A330 or 747. So during the interview, they asked me, Eva, if you get a job and if you get the chance to like request a certain fleet, what's your preference? So I talked for about 20 minutes why I wanted to fly the 747. So it was very, very fun. It wasn't guaranteed. It was only when I got the email that I got the job that it also specified that I got the job as a direct entry first officer 747. So yeah, I was very, very happy with that.
Yeah, super happy, I can imagine. So you fly the cargo with very long routes, literally around the globe. You deal with huge time zone differences. Do you have any routine to cope well with the jet lag?
No, every trip I take it differently. Like, sometimes I am lucky. So far, I managed to sleep very well in the bunk. So on the long haul flights, when we have time to rest in the bunk, I always sleep. So that helps. And then sometimes I stay more on Hong Kong time zone. Sometimes I really try to switch. I find it quite challenging on the very long patterns in America that you even switch time zones while flying through America, and it can be like 7 or 8 days. And at the end, you just don't know your time zone anymore. What really helps is to exercise before a flight. Then I usually try to wake up before my wake-up call. Hopefully the flight then isn't delayed or anything and just goes on schedule. And then I'll go for a run in the gym. I really miss that. We can't use the gym at the moment on any layovers. But that's my normal strategy, and I find that really, really helps to feel energized.
During those routes, you fly a lot to Anchorage. Alaska is well known for its bush plane aviation. Did you manage to do some bush plane flying there?
No, nothing. Well, it's not really a bush plane. I have a friend in Anchorage. He owns a Super Cub and a Husky. And last summer, he took me as a passenger with him to have my first float plane experience. So that was pretty amazing. And then I also had a helicopter flying lesson in Alaska like a few months ago, which is also not really bush plane flying, but it's still flying in Alaska, right? Pretty bloody amazing.
Yeah, exactly. The landscapes look very, very beautiful.
It's beautiful, absolutely. Yeah, wow.
I know that you flew around the globe. Do you have any bush experience at all?
Well, I did what's called a bush flying course. When was this? In 2012. So it was a year before I got into Ryanair, because you have to make your flight hours every year to keep your license valid. And I was doing that initially in the Netherlands, but it's quite limited, the opportunities you can do there in general aviation. And I was starting to be... desperate is a big word, but I was looking into maybe going to Mount Botswana, where a lot of people go to fly bush planes. In the end, I realized that I couldn't do that because my debt was so high. For sure, I couldn't even pay my interest with what I would possibly make there, if I would even let the job. But then I got really curious, because I'd done already quite a lot of research, to fly in Africa. And then instead of doing my flight hours in Holland that year, I flew to Joburg. I could do so cheaply because I was working for Martinair. And I stayed there for 2 weeks, and I did a bush flying course with a company called Sky Africa. And that was really fun way of flying. I really enjoyed that, and it brought me back the positive energy I needed to keep looking for my first airline job. So yeah, that was great. Yeah, chasing giraffes off the runway and just doing all kind of landings on dirt strips and whatnot. That was fun.
I know you transitioned from journalism to aviation. Did your studies help you managing your social media accounts and blog?
No. Well, I have a blog where I write my story, basically, like how I became a pilot, why, and the transition as well from passengers to cargo and living in Hong Kong and things like that. So there it helped. Like, I still like to write. But for the social media, I think it's more enjoying social media, and it's not really requiring any studies. Basically, it speaks for itself. For some reason, like being a female pilot, you stand out, and on social media, that generates quite some popularity. And then if you're open about the job and you engage with people that follow you, then it just grows bigger, this account.
Is it long and time demanding? Editing the pictures, writing articles?
No, not really. And I don't plan it in advance. Like, I try to upload pictures regularly, but yeah, I always have like a few pictures ready, basically, that I think, this is nice for next post. And it doesn't really take a lot of time or editing. Like, I'll try to maybe get it a little bit sharper. I use an app called Lightroom, but that's about it. And then usually it's either a selfie or a nice landscape, or I try to, or the airplane, or just things that I enjoy sharing. And it's just like my account is as if you're with me on my trips, like Fly with Eva is the account. So I do share a lot, like what I'm doing on the layover, what my schedule looks like, how it changes sometimes, that I'm flying in the night again. It's just really giving an insight in the job as it is, not more glamorous as well. Like, I will also share maybe the not so exciting things, just really an open book on social media as well.
Yeah, and it's definitely a very good mean to highlight the way you leave your job. You began your aviation career in 2008, that's it?
Yeah, so my first job 2013, but I started the flying course in 2008, end of 2008.
Yeah, so from this point, from 2008, do you have any major lessons learned you want to share with the audience?
Yeah, that it's possible to live your dream, basically. Like, I just enjoy my job tremendously. Like, it's something I truly, truly love. And I genuinely enjoy the people that I'm working with, and I feel so fortunate that every time I go on a trip, I'm just happy and I'm excited to go. And I'm as well excited to come home again. And I think that's as close as you can be to living your dream. Like, if you enjoy as much being off as working, it's just, I feel I'm in a very good flow. And I also enjoyed the years working for the low-cost company. I enjoyed the years living in Barcelona, and I also lived in Rome. Like, that's the kind of lifestyle I aimed for as a young girl already, like living abroad and living an interesting life, meeting nice people. And it really happens now through the life as a pilot. And I just feel very comfortable as well now after 2 years on the 747. It's just, I feel at ease and at home almost. Like, yeah, life's good.
Yeah, sounds good. Do you have anything in particular in your aviation bucket list that you want to achieve?
Absolutely. To go to the left seat. Yeah. that's absolutely a major goal. It's gonna take, if I stay in my current airline, it's gonna take a long time due to seniority. It's gonna take even longer probably if I would switch companies. So that's also a reason that why I would like to stay. Yeah, that's my absolute number one goal. Like, it would be my dream to be in command of a 747 freighter.
Oh yeah, I can easily imagine. So Eva, the podcast is going to its end. Do you have anything you want to add to the audience?
I don't know if there's any female listeners out there. Like, what I try to accomplish very much with my social media account is to show how normal it is for a girl or a woman to do what I'm doing and what a lot of other women are doing. And it still surprises me the reactions I get from a lot of my female followers that just doesn't occur to them that it's a profession that they can choose for, or that they're just scared to enter a male-dominated profession. I just want to say, if those women are listening, just get in touch, and I'll tell you that we're no longer the pioneers in the aviation industry. Like, there's women that done the hard work, and never ever have I felt that I was judged differently than my male colleagues. Maybe I'm lucky with that because I hear sometimes other stories, but I think the industry gets better and better for that. So don't let that doubt stop you. If you feel it's something you want to do and you are interested to pursue, go for it. Absolutely. That's I would like to share that, because I think it's an amazing profession, an amazing job. And I just wish that more women would choose for it. Not that the industry necessarily gets better, but it's just like, yeah, it's also an option. And it's a great life in my eyes.
Yeah, definitely. I think that the times have changed. During my previous assignment, I was instructor and I had some female WISOs flying on the back seat. And I don't think there is currently any difference from a female pilot or WISO to a male pilot or WISO. And this is definitely a good thing. The old-fashioned way is over.
There's the odd one, but it's no longer standard. Like, there's absolutely no proving yourself all the time. Just prove yourself as your male colleague as well. Like, it is a profession where you're judged constantly on how you perform, but I never felt that it had anything to do with gender. So good that you have the same experience.
Yeah, and I think it's a very good thing. Well, Eva, thank you very much for coming here. It was a pleasure having you in the 90s podcast. I know you still have a busy schedule flying cargo all around the world. So thanks again, and have a very nice flight.
Well, you're welcome.
You've been listening to the 90s podcast, an aviation podcast. You can follow Eva on her blog, flywitheva.com, on her Instagram, @flywitheva, on Facebook and Twitter. If you liked this podcast, subscribe on iTunes, Google Podcast, Deezer, Stitcher, or Spotify. You can follow us on Instagram on the 90s consulting account. Click on the link for any inquiry. Thank you for listening, and fly safe. Bye.